ಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರಶ್ರೀ ಹಿಸ್ ಡಿವೈನ್ ಗ್ರೇಸ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಠಾಕೂರ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕೀ ಜಯ. ಅನಂತ ಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ವೃಂದ ಕೀ ಜಯ. ನಾಮಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಹರಿದಾಸ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್ ಕೀ ಜಯ. ಪ್ರೇಮ್ ಸೆ ಕಹೋ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಕದಾದ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದ ಕೀ ಜಯ. ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋಪ ಗೋಪಿನಾಥ್ ಶ್ಯಾಮಕುಂಡ ರಾಧಾ ಕುಂಡ ಗಿರಿರಾಜ್ ಗೋವರ್ಧನ್ ಕೀ ಜಯ. ಗಂಗಾ ಮಾಯಿ ಯಮುನಾ ಮಾಯಿ ಕೀ ಜಯ. ಭಕ್ತಿ ದೇವಿ ತುಳಸಿ ದೇವಿ ಕೀ ಜಯ. ನವದ್ವೀಪ್ ಮಾಯಾಪುರ್ ಧಾಮ್ ಕೀ ಜಯ. ಪುರುಷೋತ್ತಮ ಕ್ಷೇತ್ರ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ್ಪುರಿ ಧಾಮ್ ಕೀ ಜಯ. ನಿತಾಯ ಗೌರ ಪ್ರೇಮಾನಂದೇ. ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದ ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್. ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದ ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್. ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದ ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್. ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್, ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್, ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಅಂಡ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಗೌರಾಂಗ. ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ. ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ. ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ. ನಾರಾಯಣಂ ನಮಸ್ಕೃತ್ಯ ನರಂ ಚೈವ ನರೋತ್ತಮಂ ದೇವೀಂ ಸರಸ್ವತೀಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ತತೋ ಜಯಮುದೀರಯೇತ್. ನಷ್ಟಪ್ರಾಯೇಷು ಅಭದ್ರೇಷು ನಿತ್ಯಂ ಭಾಗವತ ಸೇವಯಾ ಭಗವತೀರ್ವುತ್ತಮ ಶ್ಲೋಕೇ ಭಕ್ತಿರ್ಭವತೀ ನೈಷ್ಟಿಕೀ. ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ದೇವಕೀನಂದನಾಯ ಚ ನಂದಗೋಪಕುಮಾರಾಯ ಗೋವಿಂದಾಯ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ. ಓಮಜ್ಞಾನತಿಮಿರಂದಸ್ಯ ಜ್ಞಾನಾಂಜನಶಲಾಕಯಾ ಚಕ್ಷುರೋನ್ಮಿಲಿತಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ. ಶ್ರೀಚೈತನ್ಯಮನೋಭೀಷ್ಟಂ ಸ್ಥಾಪಿತಂ ಯೇನ ಭೂತಲೆ ಸ್ವಯಂ ರೂಪ ಕದಾ ಮಯ್ಯಂ ತದಾತಿ ಸ್ವಪದಾಂತಿಕಂ. ವಂದೇಹಂ ಶ್ರೀಗುರು ಶ್ರೀಯುತಾಪದಕಮಲಂ ಶ್ರೀಗುರೂನ್ ವೈಷ್ಣವಾಂಶ್ಚ ಶ್ರೀರೂಪಾಂ ಸಾಗ್ರಜಾತಾಂ ಸಹಗಣಾ ರಘುನಾಥಾನ್ವಿತಂ ತಾಂ ಸಜೀವಂ ಸಾದ್ವೈತಂ ಸಾವಧೂತಂ ಪರಿಜನಾ ಸಹಿತಂ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯದೇವಂ. ಶ್ರೀರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣಪದಾನ್ ಸಹಗಣಾಲಲಿತಾ ಶ್ರೀವಿಶಾಖಾನ್ವಿತಾಂಶ್ಚ. ಹೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕರುಣಾ ಸಿಂಧು ದೀನಬಂಧೋ ಜಗತ್ಪತೆ ಗೋಪೇಶ ಗೋಪಿಕಾ ಕಾಂತ ರಾಧಾಕಾಂತ ನಮೋಸ್ತುತೆ. ತಪ್ತ ಕಾಂಚನ ಗೌರಾಂಗೀ ರಾಧೇ ವೃಂದಾವನೇಶ್ವರೀ ವೃಷಭಾನುಸುತೆ ದೇವಿ ಪ್ರಣಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಪ್ರಿಯೇ. ವಾಂಚಾಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾಸಿಂಧೂಭ್ಯಯೇವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ. ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ್ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ. ಈ ಫ್ಯಾನ್ ಬಂದ್. So today we are the Sunday feast class. Well, for the past several weeks we have been discussing a series of topics on the lives of the different Mahajans. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the sixth canto, Yamaraj, in his conversation with the Yamadutas, he mentions the names of the 12 Mahajans. I'm sorry, not the 6 Mahajans, the 12 Mahajans. So the last, almost for the past 3 months, on every Sunday we have been taking one Mahajan and then speaking on that. So in this Sunday we'll be taking the last Mahajan, that is Lord Kapila Dev. So Kapila Dev, although in the list of Mahajans it came before, but the previous one of the weeks it was left out, so today the last Mahajan we'll be discussing. So Kapila Dev is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Kapila Dev's description comes mainly in the third canto, chapter number. Kapila Dev appears in the 24th chapter of the third canto, and then his different pastimes continue till the 33rd chapter, the last chapter of the third canto. So in regards to Kapila Dev, like in regards to the various other Mahajans, the devotees discussed different pastimes, different stories related to them. But in regards to Kapila Dev, what is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam is mainly the teachings of Kapila Dev. So there are the main activity performed by Kapila Dev is actually his teachings to the the teachings given by Kapila Dev to his mother Devahuti, and the teachings of Kapila Dev is called as Sankhya Yoga. So we will be mainly discussing the teachings of Lord Kapila, and today, of course, the teachings of Lord Kapila is discussed in 8 chapters, 25th chapter till the 32nd chapter. Definitely, we'll not be able to cover all these chapters, but as far as possible, we'll try to give a brief description of these teachings. So, when we talk about the teachings actually play an important role. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Krishna was conversing with Sudama Brahman, so there he explains about three types of gurus, three kinds of gurus. So he says the first guru of a living entity is that one who actually gives birth to a living entity, that is a father. The second guru of a living entity is that one who gives diksha, one who initiates him and performs the Upanayana Samskara, he is the second guru, the diksha guru. And the third guru is that guru who actually gives transcendental knowledge to the living entity. And then Krishna says that out of the three gurus, the spiritual master who gives transcendental knowledge, who is called as Siksha Guru, he says that I am actually non-different from that Siksha Guru. So he explains, basically, the Siksha Guru, Krishna, according to the words of Krishna, Siksha Guru is actually more important than the Diksha Guru, and who is more important than the person who actually gives birth. But in many cases, the Siksha Guru, the Diksha Guru may be same as the Siksha Guru. And in many other cases, one may have taken initiation from a spiritual master, and the initiating spiritual master may also give Siksha, but apart from that, a devotee may also take Siksha, the teachings from different other devotees. What I want to emphasize is that, so Krishna says that the Siksha Guru, the person who gives transcendental knowledge, Krishna gives particular emphasis to that spiritual master. I am actually non-different from that spiritual master. So that is why So more than the Diksha Guru, Siksha Guru is important, and more than the Siksha Guru, the Siksha given by the Siksha Guru is even more important. So many times somebody is attached to a particular guru, but he does not take interest in the teachings of the spiritual master. But if a person wants to make a progress in the spiritual life, yeah, definitely one tries to serve the spiritual master, one tries to serve the physical body of the spiritual master whenever it is possible. But more important is to actually take interest in the teachings of the spiritual master. So by that a person can become more mature, and by that a person can advance even after the disappearance of the spiritual master, even in the absence of a spiritual master. So therefore, in the case of Kapila Dev, we are mainly going to describe the teachings of Kapila Dev. In fact, that is the only subject matter which is available in the Srimad Bhagavatam. These teachings are very important. So the third canto, 25th chapter, begins with the questions asked by Shaunaka Rishis to Suta Goswami. The Rishis headed by Shaunaka to Suta Goswami. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are different conversations are taking place. In the place of Naimisharanya, there are many sages, 88,000 sages have assembled. So those sages have appointed Suta Goswami to speak Srimad Bhagavatam. The Shaunaka Rishi is like the leader among the sages. He is putting forward the question on behalf of the other sages. And Suta Goswami, when he speaks Srimad Bhagavatam to the sages, he narrates the conversation between Parishit Maharaj and Shukadev Goswami. And Shukadev Goswami, when he is speaking to Parishit Maharaj, he speaks the conversation which happened between Maitreya and Vidura. And when Maitreya Rishi is answering Vidura, he refers to different conversations. One such conversation is that he is going to speak about Devahuti and Kapila Dev. So Suta Goswami, he is actually putting forward this question. Shaunaka Rishi is actually putting forward this question. So Shaunaka Rishi says that, I want to hear about the Lord Kapil Dev. He is the best among all the Purushavataras, and he is the best among all the yogis. And the topics related to Lord Kapila Dev is very pleasing to hear. So please actually describe about these topics more and more. So Srila Prabhupada writes a very beautiful purport. He says that the topics of Bhagavad Gita, hearing from Krishna or his expansion like Kapila Dev is very pleasing to the senses, and Bhagavad Gita can be read or heard many times, but because it gives pleasure, the more one reads Gita, the more a person gets the appetite to read and understand it. So, like, there are many best-selling books are there. So the good books are those books which people read with great pleasure. There are some best-selling novels. So those books are actually read by people with actually great pleasure. They are actually good books. But the great books are those books which people reread with great pleasure. A person reads it again with pleasure. But the greatest of those books are those books which can be reread any number of times, multiple number of times, infinite number of times with pleasure. So Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam come under this category. Because like, there are many best-selling books, okay, people may read those books, but then how many times, like, people actually reread those books? Maybe once they read with pleasure, maybe twice, but after some time, people don't actually take those books. But, although in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, right now we may not experience that, but these books have that capacity to give increased appetite for the reader, which the reader can reread with multiple number of times with pleasure. Because the reason is that, like in the case of the any normal mundane books, which deal with material subject matter, the pleasure a person obtains is mainly because of the novelty of the information. When a person gets to read something new, when a person reads and understands some new theory, or suppose a person is reading some science or mathematics or different subjects, person gets some new information, some new historical story. So by the novelty of the information, a person gets some pleasure. But once that, after that novelty is over, then there is no more pleasure associated with it. But in the case of the spiritual textbooks, why a person can experience more and more pleasure is that, because these books are, they are actually non-different from Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam is actually non-different from Krishna. And Bhagavad Gita contains the teachings of Krishna. In that sense, it is also non-different from Krishna. So we are dealing with, when we are reading these books, we are actually dealing with a person. So because Krishna is unlimited, the teachings of Krishna, the subject matter about Krishna, that they are also unlimited. So Jiva Goswami explains that, like each verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam is like a Kamadenu cow. The Kamadenu cow is that cow which we can milk actually unlimited number of times, and the Kamadenu cow will actually give unlimited quantity of milk. So similarly, in the case of these books, because we are dealing with the person Krishna who is actually unlimited, so depending on the attitude of the person who approaches these books, so Krishna can reveal newer and newer, Krishna can give newer and newer enlightenment at each reading. Krishna can actually reveal newer and newer insights into the same subject matter, because here we are actually dealing with a person. So in the case of the mundane textbooks, the reading is basically one way. We are trying to understand with our effort. But in the case of spiritual books, it's a two-way process. There is a receptivity, there is a receptivity of the person who is reading or the hearing, and then Krishna, who is the personification of the particular book. So he, by seeing the receptivity, he actually gives newer and newer insights. So because of that, it can actually go on unlimited number of times. One can reread with greater and greater pleasure. And that is what actually Prabhupada mentions in this purport, which he repeats in many places. So then when Suta Goswami, Shravanaka Rishi is asking this question to Suta Goswami, and Suta Goswami begins to narrate about Kapila Dev. So then he narrates the conversation between Devahuti. Devahuti is the mother of Kapila Dev. And between the conversation between Devahuti and Kapila Dev. So Devahuti's husband is Kardama Muni. Kapila Dev is born to Kardama Muni and Devahuti. And after Kapila Dev was born, Kardama Muni, he retired from his family life and he went to the forest. And here we see an interesting point, that Kardama Muni is actually a pure devotee of the Lord. So his desire is to actually serve the Lord, but the Lord had appeared in his own house as his son, but Kardama Muni leaves the home and actually goes to the forest. So one may wonder that if he is a devotee, he is interested in serving the Lord, but why did he actually leave the house and actually go to the forest? So Srila Prabhupada says that Kardama Muni wanted to follow the instructions of the Supreme Lord given in the Vedic scriptures, which tell that especially in those ages where this Vedic culture was actually very strictly followed, a person goes through these four ashramas, brahmachari, grahastha, and then vanaprastha and sannyas. So there is a, in the, when a person retires, a person, like in those times, a person actually leaves the house and goes to the forest. So that is like the lifestyle which is mentioned in the scriptures. So the Kardama Muni, he wanted to follow the this particular instructions given by the Supreme Lord in the scriptures. So therefore he left the house. So that means from this we can again learn that how Kardama Muni, the principle which we can learn is that how one should actually give more importance to actually following the instructions of the Supreme Lord or the spiritual master, which is actually exhibited by Kardama Muni. And Kardama Muni, after he leaves home, then Devahuti, Lord Brahma had appeared, and Lord Brahma had told Kardama Muni and Devahuti. Lord Brahma had told that your son Kapila Dev will dissipate the ignorance of Devahuti. And then he will actually describe the process of Sankhya Yoga and the Bhakti Yoga to Devahuti. So Lord Brahma had actually told this to Devahuti. So Devahuti, remembering the words of Lord Brahma, Devahuti is actually putting forward questions to Kapila Dev. So here we see that here is an instance where the mother is actually asking questions to the son, and she is actually accepting the son as the spiritual master, and then she is putting forward questions, and then Kapila Dev is actually going to describe Sankhya Yoga. So the principle is explained with respect to knowledge. It is said that so there are like different considerations in regards to seniority, in regards to different principles. But when it comes to actually knowledge, although a person may be younger in age, but if that person is more knowledgeable, then that person can be accepted as a spiritual master, and then one can take knowledge from him. So this is a principle with respect to knowledge. Like for example, like Shukadev Goswami was only 16 years old. But there were sages who were present in that assembly who were actually like many thousands of years old. They were like some of the sages were like the Param Guru of the Shukadev Goswami, Narada Muni, Vyasdev was there, Narada Muni was there. Many Deva Rishis and Brahma Rishis, they were all there. But still they actually chose Shukadev Goswami to speak Srimad Bhagavatam, although he was only 16 years old. Because the reason is that Shukadev Goswami had great depth of realization, and he was maddened with love for the Supreme Lord. He was mad in love for Krishna, so therefore they actually chose to hear from him. So therefore, in regards to accepting knowledge, that even if a person is actually younger in age, it can be accepted. So Devahuti, although she is a mother, she is actually putting forward questions to Kapila Dev. So Devahuti, she says that I am very sick of the disturbance caused by sense gratification, and because of that I have fallen into ignorance, so therefore I want to ask some questions. So Srila Prabhupada says that the qualification for actually getting transcendental knowledge is that one should be frustrated by the contact of the senses with the sense objects, or one should be tired of sense gratification. So when a person is more tired of sense gratification, then one gets a great impetus to actually get knowledge. So then Devakuti says that I am taking shelter of you because you are worthy to take shelter, and you are the axe which can cut the tree of material existence of your devotees, and you are also the best knowers of bhakti. So in this way, on being asked by Devakuti, and Devakuti, she is essentially the first question, Devakuti puts forward many questions in this conversation. The first question she is asking is that, please dissipate my ignorance which is caused by the identification with me and mine, and please actually explain about the Prakriti and Purusha. So Prakriti refers to the material nature and Purusha refers to the, Purusha can refer to the Supreme Lord or it can refer to the living entity. So the first question which Devakuti is asking is that, please describe about the Purusha and Prakriti. And within that question she is also saying that, please dissipate my ignorance. So then Kapila Dev, when he hears this question, Kapila Dev actually smiles at Devahuti and then he starts actually speaking. So Kapila Dev says that, I am going to describe Adhyatmika Yoga. Yoga Adhyatmika Pumsam Mato Nishreyasayame Atyanto Uparatir Yatra Dukkasyacha Sukasyacha. I am going to describe Adhyatmika Yoga, the yoga which is concerned with the spirit soul, which is beneficial for the living entity. And by practicing this yoga, a person can, it causes detachment from happiness and distress. And then Kapila Dev says that, this particular yoga system, it's a very ancient yoga system. And it is very easy to perform. And I have described this yoga system previously to many sages also. In that sense, he is trying to tell about the authenticity of this yoga system. So then Kapila Dev, he says that, actually this yoga system is actually, this yoga system, this Adhyatmika Yoga has got three types. So this particular verse, that is third canto, 25th chapter, 13th verse, this is like the seed verse. Based on this verse, like the future subject matter actually evolves. So this Adhyatmika Yoga has three types. One is Bhakti Yoga and another is Sankhya Yoga, or also called as Jnana Yoga, and third is Ashtanga Yoga. So Kapila Dev is going to describe about all these three types of yoga: Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga. So just a brief one point about Bhakti Yoga. So in the case of Ashtanga Yoga, a person is focused mainly on achieving the mystic siddhis, mystic perfections. A person is focused on perfection. And in the case of Sankhya Yoga or Jnana Yoga, a person is focused on knowledge. And in the case of Karma Yoga, a person is focused mainly on action. But in the case of Bhakti Yoga, a person is focused mainly on purifying one's intention of pleasing the Supreme Lord. Just a brief description about this yoga. So then Kapila Dev says that the mind of the living entity is the pivot. When the mind becomes attached to the three modes of material nature, it actually causes bondage for the living entity. But when the mind becomes attached to the Supreme Lord, it actually causes liberation. Then Kapila Dev describes, when the person is liberated, what are the symptoms of a liberated mind? In few verses he describes how a person becomes purified of all the impurities like lust and greed. A person becomes, can understand that how he is actually the spirit soul different from the body. So then, after describing this, Kapila Dev says that how a person can, after describing the symptoms of a liberated mind, and then he says, describes how a person can come to the stage of liberation. So in order to come to the stage of liberation, a person has to perform bhakti primarily, and along with some jnana and yoga. So you'll see that although Kapila Dev will describe about Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga, his emphasis will be on bhakti in these chapters. So Kapila Dev emphasizes the importance of, one has to primarily practice bhakti, along with some aspect of Jnana and Ashtang Yoga. So then he says that na yujyamanaya bhaktya bhagavati akilatmane sadrushosti shivapanta yoginam brahma siddhaye. He says the most auspicious path is actually the process of bhakti yoga. The perfection in self-realization cannot be attained by the yogi unless a person engages in bhakti, because that is the only auspicious path. So there are, like, for example, when a person is practicing the path of fruitive activities or karma, a person is more self-centered, a person can be envious of other people. And in the practice of jnana and yoga, a person is more self-centered. He may not be envious of other people, because the elements of jnana and yoga also involve that one should not have hatred towards others. So the jnanis and yogi, they are not envious of others, but they are not concerned about helping other practitioners. They are more concerned about their own bhajan, their own practice of actually practice of jnana and yoga. But the practice of devotional service, the devotees are actually, they are helpful to others, and they are non-envious by nature. So these are some analysis of the practitioners of these different paths. There are many places in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the scriptures, which give a comparison between these three paths. So Kapila Dev says that the only auspicious path is bhakti, but then how to get that bhakti? He says, prasangam ajaram pasham atmana kavayo viduhu sa eva sadushukrutu mokshadvaram apavritam. Prasangam ajaram pasham atmana kavayo viduhu. He says that materialistic association is the cause of entanglement, but on the other hand, when a person associates with the sadhus, then the doors to liberation gets opened. Sa eva sadushukruto mokshadvaram apavritam. By associating with the devotees, a person can actually start practicing bhakti, the doors of liberation gets opened. Then one will immediately get the question, okay, in order to practice bhakti, one needs association of the devotees. But what are the, how do I know who are the devotees? What are the characteristics of those devotees? So then Kapila Dev describes in four verses about the characteristics of the devotees and the activities of the sadhus, activities of the devotees. So when he describes the characteristics, he describes the primary characteristics and also the secondary characteristics. The secondary characteristics, he explains that titikshava karunika suhruda sarvadehinam ajata shatrava shanta sadavo sadubhushana. A devotee is tolerant, he is merciful to all living entities, and he does not have any enemies. So these are all actually different secondary characteristics. So these characteristics are actually awarded to a devotee. Just like suppose a soldier who has made a great sacrifice for the country, then he is given a medal. By seeing the consistent dedication of a soldier, the actually government gives a medal. So similarly, when the Supreme Lord sees a living entity consistently performing devotional service, which is the primary characteristics of the sadhu. The primary characteristic is that he is engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Lord without deviation. So when the Supreme Lord sees that consistency, which is the primary characteristics, then he awards medals to the devotee in the form of these qualities. So when we look at the devotees, we have to focus mainly on the primary characteristics. because sometimes a devotee may not exhibit these qualities. But as long as we see that this person is engaged in devotional service consistently, he is actually a sadhu. So sometimes people actually focus mainly on the secondary characteristics. When people focus on the secondary characteristics, like being tolerant, soft-spoken, when people focus on secondary characteristics, sometimes they may mistake a person who may be having these qualities, which may be just coming from their past karma, which may not have anything to do with the devotional service. So sometimes one may mistake a person who may be just a person who is actually elevated in mode of goodness. He may not be engaging in devotional service. One may mistake him to be an advanced devotee. And one may mistake a devotee to be an ordinary person because he is not exhibiting these qualities. So therefore, we have to focus on the primary characteristics. Like, to give another example, like suppose you are going to a bank. So you are going to a bank and then sure, you are depositing some money to the cashier. So as soon as you enter the bank, so the cashier tells, give this customer some butterscotch milkshake. So you get some butterscotch milkshake and then you drink it. Then after drinking, then you go and give some deposit, some money. So you give 50,000 rupees, deposit that money. So the cashier actually takes the money and then he enters in the passbook as 5,000. So the point is that, so suppose if the customer is focused mainly, the person who is going to the bank, if he is focused mainly on the butterscotch milkshake if the cashier is giving, although the cashier is making wrong entry, so he may think, oh, this cashier is so nice, but actually he is cheating you. So we have to focus mainly on the primary duty of a cashier, whether he is accepting the money and making the right entry in the cash book. So even if he speaks little harshly, even if he is not good in customer care, but as long as he is doing this primary duty, then we accept him. So similarly, the primary quality of a devotee is that he is actually engaged in devotional service. And then Kapiladeva explains that one should associate with such devotees. So then he says that when we associate with such devotees, what is the effect of such association? Satam prasangam mama virya samvidu bhavanti hritkarna rasayana kata tajyoshanat ash apavarga vartmani shraddharatir bhaktir anukramishyati. So he says that satam prasangam mama virya samvidu. So by associating with such devotees, prasanga here refers to excellent association. By associating with devotees who are situated very nicely in their devotional service, or by excellent association with advanced devotees, what happens? Satam prasangam mama virya samvidu. A person gets realization of the Lord's pastimes. That means a person comes to the stage of nishta. A person gets rid of the stage of anartha nivritti and comes to the stage of nishta. And then, bhavanti hritkarna rasayana kata. Then, when a person comes to the stage of nishta, when he continues to associate, then, when he hears from those devotees, the subject matter of Krishna Katha, which he hears from the devotees, it will be very sweet to their ear and to the heart. That means a person will come to the stage of ruchi, a person will develop taste for devotional service. So Prabhupada writes in one purport in the 7th canto, the talks of the pure devotees are pleasing to the ear and appealing to the heart. So sometimes when we hear, sometimes people may speak in a way it is very pleasing to the ear, but it may not be good to our heart. And sometimes a person may speak which may be actually needed for our heart, but it may not be actually pleasing to hear. But the talks of the pure devotees are pleasing to the ear and they also appeal to the heart. So, bhavanti hritkarna rasayana katha, that means a person actually starts tasting Krishna katha by such association. He comes to the stage of ruchi, and then when he further associates with the devotees, then he comes to the stage of asakti or intense attachment. So then he comes to the stage of bhava or the initial stage of love for the Lord. Tajyoshanat ash apavarga vartmani shraddha ratir bhakti ranukramishyati. A person develops like asakti and bhava. Rati he refers to bhava, and a person comes to the stage of prema just by association with his devotees. But these happen gradually, anukramishyati. So it is not an overnight process, it happens gradually. So Vishnu Chakravartakur explains that so from inferior association with the devotees, so devotees are also in different levels. So these results happen, that is, a person progresses, comes to a stage of, goes beyond the stage of anartha nivriti, comes to a stage of nishta, and then ruchi, asakti, bhava, prema. So these progress happens by excellent association with the devotees. But by inferior association with the devotees, a person only engages in bhajana kriya, and he may not actually progress beyond those stages. So therefore, of course, we want to associate with all the devotees, but then, especially when there is actually association of more advanced devotees, one should actually grab that opportunity. One should definitely prioritize to hear from them. So Kapiladev, having described how a person, one should actually perform, bhakti is the best path. In order to practice bhakti, one should associate with the devotees, and he described the characteristics of the devotees, how by associating the devotees a person progresses. Then he explains that the practice of jnana and yoga is not complete without bhakti. The practice of the jnana and yoga is not complete without bhakti. So just like, because the reason is that even when a person is practicing jnana or yoga, ultimately, the results of the jnana and yoga, they are awarded by the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is only awarding all the results of jnana, yoga or karma. And the Supreme Lord is mainly attracted by the process of bhakti. So therefore, the practitioners of jnana, yoga or karma, unless they practice some element of bhakti, they will not get the results of those practices. Because the Lord sees whether this person is engaging in some bhakti or not. That's why even in Ganpati Puja, we see the chanting of the holy names being, it ends with the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Because ultimately all the results come from the Supreme Lord. So therefore, even in the worship of the demigods, or even any process which is recommended in the scriptures, it will have some element of bhakti. So, to give a simple example, a person who is actually, a materialistic person, so suppose a person is going to watch a movie. So, a movie may have the best storyline, best cinematography, and maybe good comedy, and so many things may be there. But if a person is interested mainly in the some action in the movie, some fights, every now and then some fights, but if there is no fight in the movie, he will feel that, oh, I spent so much and there's nothing. It's a waste of time. Because his main interest is actually some action in the movie. Or somebody may be interested some romance in the movie. So the movie may have many other good elements, some drama, some nice, some cinematography, nice direction, etc. But if somebody is looking mainly for romance, you will feel that, oh, I wasted 3 hours watching this movie. So similarly, based on that person, so similarly, because Krishna, he is mainly attracted to bhakti, so therefore, even if a person is practicing yoga or jnana, if that person is not engaging in some aspect of bhakti, he will not get the results of those practices. So then Devahuti asks further questions. So then, when Devahuti asks 3 questions, she says that, so what kind of bhakti should I perform to easily attain your feet? And Devahuti also asks, please explain the path of jnana and also explain the path of Ashtanga Yoga. So when Kapila Dev had already described that bhakti is the best auspicious path, why is Devahuti asking about the other paths, jnana and yoga, along with the practice of bhakti? Because the reason is that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that an inquisitive person, he knows only his own idea. But an intelligent people know the ideas of other people also. Or intelligent person wants to know the ideas of other people also. Or, I'll give you another example. That, like for example, that, like suppose a person wants to buy a, say, suitcase. So he searches in the website and then a company is actually advertising, oh, we have this suitcase and these are the characteristics, these are the specifications of the suitcase. And then the company also gives some links of suitcases manufactured by other companies. So why the company actually gives links to the suitcases manufactured by other companies? Just so that the customer can actually compare the suitcase manufactured by this company with the suitcases manufactured by other companies. And by making a comparative analysis, a person can come to a stronger conclusion, oh, this is the suitcase which is having like much better characteristics at a good price. So by making a comparative analysis, that we become more convinced that, oh, this is the right choice. So if you are knowing only about only the process of bhakti, and if you do not know about the other processes, and if you do not know how the bhakti is superior to other processes, then the conviction in the process of bhakti will not be as strong as when you make a comparative analysis. So therefore, Devahuti is interested only in the process of bhakti, but she also wants to know about the other processes, just to make her faith more strong and for the sake of others. So then Kapila Dev begins answering. So Kapila Dev, so Devahuti has asked the 3 questions in this, she is asking about what kind of bhakti I should perform. The first question she asks is that, what is it? Please describe about Prakriti and Purusha, which Kapila Dev will answer in the next chapter. And then the second question Devahuti is asking is that, what kind of bhakti I should perform? And then she is asking about the process of jnana and yoga, third and fourth question. So Kapila Dev answers by describing the pure devotional service, by describing what is pure devotional service. Pure devotional service, bhakti is performed without material desires. And this pure devotional service, it consists of engaging the senses in the service of the Supreme Lord. And in this process, the mind is exclusively dedicated to the Supreme Lord. So then, Kapiladev says that Jarayat Ashu Yakosham Nigirnam Analoyata. So he says that by the practice of bhakti, by practicing bhakti, one's subtle body gets destroyed. Just like the digestive fire consumes food. So here he gives an analogy. As digestive fire consumes food. Similarly, the bhakti actually destroys the subtle body. So at the time of the death, a person leaves one gross body and takes up another gross body. The subtle body carries the spirit soul from one gross body to another gross body. But at the time of liberation, even the subtle body is also destroyed. A person leaves from the material realm to the spiritual realm. So the by the practice of bhakti, the subtle body is destroyed, a person goes to the spiritual realm. So here there is an interesting analogy. There are three aspects to this analogy. So the first aspect is that, like, for example, first aspect, like, the analogy is that digestion. So when a person eats food, the digestive fire which is there within the body, the digestive fire, it destroys the useless portions of the food and it nourishes the life here within the body, it nourishes the senses, the different limbs of the body. So the digestive fire does two things. It destroys the useless portions of the body and it actually nourishes the life here and the senses, etc. So similarly, the bhakti destroys the material portions of the senses and the mind. But bhakti does not destroy the spiritual portions of the mind and the senses. Because sometimes one may think that by practicing bhakti, a person actually attains liberation. That means that a person loses all the identity, a person merges with the Lord. But here it is explained that bhakti destroys the material portions of the mind and senses, but it does not destroy the spiritual portion of the mind and senses. It actually nourishes the spiritual portions of the mind and senses. And the second part of the analogy is that when a person is eating food, like, a person does not know how the digestion is happening. In fact, like, scientists, like, they have tried to understand how the digestion is taking place, and they come to the conclusion it is a very complicated subject matter. Like, so many processes are involved. We are just eating, we don't know, like, how the food is getting digested. Like, which organ is actually doing which function, which enzyme is getting actually secreted. We are not aware of all those things. So without our knowledge, actually food is getting digested. So similarly, when a person practices bhakti, even though a devotee does not strive for liberation, even without his actually striving for liberation, he actually attains liberation. He does not even know that he is liberated. And the third aspect of this analogy is that when a person starts eating food, right from the time you actually start the eating process, immediately the process of digestion starts. And the process of digestion becomes complete after maybe 5 hours or 8 hours, depending on what type of food you eat. After a certain number of hours, the digestion becomes fully complete. So similarly, when a person starts practicing bhakti, right from the beginning of the practice of bhakti, a person starts actually getting liberated. The process of liberation starts. And when a person becomes mature in the practice of bhakti, he becomes fully liberated. As soon as we begin the practice of bhakti, the purification starts, and as we progress more and more, then the purification becomes more complete. So these are the three parts of this analogy. Then Kapiladev describes that, what are the characteristics when a person practices his bhakti, what are the characteristics of a devotee who is in the stage of bhava. Bhava means the initial stage of love of Godhead. Shuddha Shatva Vishayatma Prema Suryamshu Samyabhag. When the love of Godhead, when the first ray of love of Godhead falls upon a devotee, then that is called as bhava. So what are the characteristics of a person in the stage of bhava? So he describes in at least in 5 verses. So for example, he says the first characteristic is that, so even in that also there are two categories. A person can come to the stage of bhava by practicing vaidhi sadhana bhakti. That means practicing devotional service according to the rules and regulations mentioned in the scriptures. When the inspiration to practice bhakti comes from the scriptures or from the spiritual master or from the superiors, then it is called as vaidhi sadhana bhakti. Raganuga sadhana bhakti means when there is a spontaneous attraction. So for example, he gives the characteristics. He says that when a person comes to the stage of bhava, a person never desires impersonal liberation. A person never desires to merge with the impersonal Brahman, impersonal aspect of the Lord. Why a person does not desire? Because three reasons. One reason is that because there is no opportunity to render service to the Lord when a person attains impersonal liberation. And second reason is that when a person attains impersonal liberation, there is no realization of the Lord's form, qualities or pastimes. There is no realization of the Lord's form and qualities. And the third reason is that there is no relishing of the Lord's sweet pastimes. So because of these three reasons, a person never desires. That is why one of the characteristics of the bhava is that moksha laguta akrit. A person does not desire the impersonal liberation. And then, few verses later it is explained that, although a person does not desire liberation, it is said that bhakti gives liberation without a separate endeavor. Although a devotee may not desire it, but the bhakti devi gives liberation to the devotee, although he does not desire it. So one may get the question, if the devotee in the stage of bhava, if he does not desire impersonal liberation, why does the bhakti devi give liberation? So it's explained, like suppose, for example, a person is having rubies and diamonds or chintamani stones. But although he may be, like he wants to give these things to others, but sometimes he may make a show of giving gold to a person. Although he may have more valuable things, but still he gives gold to some people as charity. So the reason is that because some foolish people, they may think that because he does not give gold, so therefore he does not have gold. Actually he has much more valuable things than gold. But there are certain foolish people, they will think that, oh, this person, because he is not giving gold, that means he does not have gold. They don't understand the value of things which he has, which is more valuable than gold. But just so that the foolish people understand that he also has gold, although he has much more valuable things, he actually makes a show of giving gold. So similarly, Bhakti Devi, the real offering of Bhakti Devi is that Bhakti Devi wants to give the happiness which a person can get by engaging in the service of the Lord. But there are the jnanis who actually think that who will become disturbed if Bhakti Devi does not give liberation. So just to destroy the foolishness of these jnanis who deny the, who only desire liberation, so Bhakti Devi also gives liberation to a devotee, although a devotee does not desire it. Are you getting this point? So it is not, a devotee does not desire liberation, but Bhakti Devi gives liberation just to actually destroy the foolishness of the jnanis who are interested only in liberation. Example which comes to my mind is like Dhruva Maharaj. Initially he desired to get a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma. But then, by the practice of bhakti, he was completely purified of those desires. He only wanted to actually engage in the service of the Lord. In fact, when he offered prayers, he said that, Bhaktim muhu pravahatam twayime prasanga. Bhuyat ananta mahatam amalashayanam. He said that, I only want intimate association with pure devotees, with your pure devotees. So when the Lord appeared, he did not tell anything about his initial intention with which he started the practice of bhakti. But although Dhruva Maharaj wanted only the association of devotees, but the Lord Vishnu, he said, he actually awarded his initial desires also. He awarded his initial desires with which he started the practice of bhakti. So why did the Lord award those initial desires? Because foolish people, the reason is that because many people will think that the Lord actually just to actually maintain the faith of the foolish people who are only interested in some material benefits. So the Lord wanted to prove to them that I can also give material benedictions. Although Dhruva Maharaj at this point he did not have absolutely a tinge of desire for getting any position or kingdom, etc. Although he did not desire it, but still Lord awarded his original desire. Lord said that you will be a king, you will be unrivaled king for 36,000 years. And then after that, you will rule the Dhruvaloka planet, which is the topmost planet in the entire cosmic manifestation, in the entire universe. And then you will come to the spiritual world. So he fulfilled his original desire, not because that the Lord is not convinced that Dhruva is completely purified of the desire, but to actually prove his credibility and to actually destroy the foolishness of the materialistic people who are mainly interested in some material benefits. So then Kapila Dev describes that. So after describing this characteristics of a devotee in the stage of bhava, then Kapila Dev concludes this chapter. Kapila Dev says that the fear of the material world cannot be overcome unless a person takes to the path of bhakti. Unless a person exclusively practices bhakti to me. Then one may get the question, if a person is only worshipping you, won't the demigods become angry with such a particular person who is only worshipping you? Then Kapila Dev says, Madbayad vati vatoyam suryastapati madbayad Varshatindro dakatyagnir mrityuscharati madbayat. Actually, the wind is blowing out because fear of me. Indra is actually showering rains on my order. And the fire, the death actually, fire burns and death flees everyone out of fear of me. So there is no need to actually worship somebody else. If a person worships me, that is sufficient. So then Kapila Dev concludes by saying that the greatest benefit can be achieved only by offering one's mind in intense bhakti. So then in the next chapter, he begins the 26th chapter. The 26th chapter is entitled Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. So in the 26th chapter, Kapila Dev describes about Bhakti Mishra Jnana. So you may not get too much confused with this term. Like the 26th and the 27th chapter, he describes mainly Bhakti Mishra Jnana. And the 28th chapter, he describes Bhakti Mishra Yoga. So what is it? Bhakti Mishra Jnana means the process of Jnana is the predominant element and the process of Bhakti is the secondary element. Just like for example, like suppose we are eating prasadam, so they are serving paneer sabji. So they are serving paneer sabji, so usually paneer sabji is with some gravy. So there is some tomato gravy, paneer sabji is there. So suppose, so they are serving paneer sabji, but there is only gravy is only coming out and you are just serving only one paneer. So that means like gravy is more, the paneer is actually less. Or in under serving, you see that paneer is coming more, but gravy is less. So some people, when they are taking, say, they say, just give me more gravy, just give me 1 or 2 paise of paneer. And somebody says that, you give more paneer and little gravy. And somebody else says that, just put only paneer, I don't want gravy. So similarly, like some people are interested in more gravy, that means, so they are more interested in other processes, jnana or karma, or jnana or yoga or karma. And they practice, they just want to practice little bhakti. So bhakti mishra jnana means, jnana is the predominant element, and bhakti is the secondary element. Bhakti mishra yoga means, yoga is the predominant element and bhakti is the secondary element. So some people say that, just put more mirchi from the sabji and maybe little sabji is all right. So they want the other, what is the secondary thing, they want that as the primary thing. And some people, but on the other hand, jnana mishra bhakti means bhakti is the predominant element but jnana is the secondary element. So some people who want more paneer and less gravy. So they mainly practice bhakti, but with a mixture of jnana or karma or yoga. And some people who say only paneer. They are interested. So they are compared to like, they want only bhakti. They want to practice only pure devotional service. So here in the 26th chapter, Kapila Dev describes Bhakti Mishra Jnana, 26th and the 27th chapter. So, he begins the chapter by describing what are the benefits of hearing this Bhakti Mishra Jnana, or also called as Sankhya Yoga. So, he gives three benefits. One is freed from the influence of the material modes, and one attains perfection of self-realization. And it cuts the knot of attachment to the material world. So in this chapter, he gives a detailed description of the material elements. So Sankhya Yoga means, Sankhya comes from the word Sankhya, that means to count. So Sankhya Yoga means, we count the different elements in this cosmic manifestation, and by counting the different elements, we ultimately come to the conclusion of actually connecting with the Supreme Lord, connecting with the Super Soul. So yoga means you have to connect with the Supreme Lord. Whenever you connect with the Supreme Lord, then that is called as yoga. So in this particular Sankhya Yoga, how you connect with the Supreme Lord, after analyzing all the elements in the material world, then a person comes to the conclusion that I have to ultimately connect with the Supreme Lord. So that is the purpose of actually this analysis. So therefore, just I'll briefly describe this chapter. So, like for example, like when we read the scriptures, like we have to understand that which sections of the scriptures, like we have to understand by trying to go into the technicalities of the scripture. Like for example, like in certain sections of the scripture, we have to mainly try to absorb the feelings of the people who are involved in the pastime. We have to enter into the feelings of the people. And certain sections of the scripture, we have to understand the technicalities of the subject matter. We have to try to understand the meaning involved in the different verses. What is the connection between this verse and the next verse? What are the technical details? So we have to know where to focus on the technical details and meanings and where to focus on the feelings of the people. Like for example, like in the first canto, after the Krishna's disappearance, Arjuna was actually coming back to Dwaraka and Arjuna is telling to Yudhishthira Maharaj, Tadvai Danusta Ishavaha Sarato Hayaste Soham Rati Nripatayo Yata Amananti Sarvam Kshanena Tadabhut Asadisha Riktam Basman Hutam Kuhakaradam Ivoptam Ushyam. Arjuna says that now I have the same Gandiva bow, I have the same Rata, I have the same arrows, but because Krishna has disappeared from this world, all these have become useless, just like pouring ghee into the ashes. When you pour ghee into the ashes, it does not have any use. You are not performing any yajna. Or money earned by a magic wand, it has no use by magical tricks. So here one may say Arjuna is saying that I have the same Gandiva, I have the same chariot. So somebody may get the question, after the battle of Kurukshetra was over, that Arjuna's chariot got destroyed. So Krishna told Arjuna to get down first, and then when Krishna got down, then the chariot actually got destroyed in front of Arjuna's eyes. Then how is it Arjuna is saying that I have the same chariot? So the point is here is that, here we have to enter into the, not in this technical detail, we have to enter into the feelings of Arjuna, how Arjuna is feeling separation from Krishna. So, try to understand that when we read the scriptures, we have to know, most places in the scripture, we have to enter into the feelings of the people who are involved in that particular pastime. So there, if you get stuck up in the technical details, then you will not actually, it is like licking the outer bottle of the honey. So many times, because of the modern education, we are concentrating on the technical details where we have to actually focus on the feelings. So if you want to use your intelligence and technical details, so this is the subject matter, the Sankhya Yoga, where you have to actually use your intelligence and understand what is this said in this verse and how there is a connection between this verse and the next verse. So here we have to focus on the technical details. So Kapiladev describes that. So first he describes the Prakriti and the Purusha. So the Purusha can refer to the Supreme Lord, and Prakriti refers to the material nature. So if the Purusha refers to the Supreme Lord, his interaction with Prakriti is the pastime of the Supreme Lord. It happens by his own will. But the interaction of the living entity, the Jiva Purusha, with the Prakriti is not the pastime. But the living entity becomes bewildered by the different forms produced by the material nature. And he becomes bewildered, and because of that bewilderment, the living entity thinks himself to be the doer, the enjoyer, and the controller. And that conception of the doer and enjoyer, that leads to the living entity's bondage in the material world. So then Kapila Dev speaks a beautiful verse. It's a very similar verse in the 13th chapter of the Gita, I think 21st or 22nd verse. So Kapila Dev says that Karye Karana Kartritve Karanam Prakritim Viduhu Bhoktritve Sukadukkanam Purusham Prakrite Param. So he explains that the cause of the living entity's actions is Prakriti, because like the Prakriti, material nature, it supplies the living entity, the material body, the senses, and the demigods who are controlling the different senses. The cause of the living entity's actions is the Prakriti, but the cause of the results of the living entity's actions is not Prakriti. It is the living entity himself. The result of the actions is either happiness or distress. So the cause of that happiness and distress is not Prakriti. That is the living entity himself. The Prakriti, the material nature, it supplies the body, the senses, and the demigods who are in charge of the senses, the sense devatas. And then the living entity performs actions and then he gets happiness or distress, but he is responsible for his happiness or distress. To give a simple example, like for example, you are sitting in a taxi and you tell the taxi wala, take me to Grant Road. And the taxi wala takes you to Grant Road. So, in that sense, actually the actual action is being performed by the taxi driver who drove the taxi, which has different engines and different parts. In that sense, the action was performed by the driver with the help of the taxi. But ultimately, who is responsible for going to the Grant Road? The passenger. Who told him? Passenger did not do anything. He was only sitting in the car. But the passenger only told the driver that you take me to the Grant Road. So similarly, so the material nature is supplying the body, senses, etc. The material nature is doing the action. The cause of the action is the material nature. But the living entity desired to perform the action, so therefore he is responsible for the happiness and distress. So that's what he explains here. So then Kapila Dev describes then Devahuti asks the third question. Devahuti actually, so Kapila Dev is described the Prakriti and Purusha. So then Devahuti says that, please describe more about this characteristics of the Prakriti and Purusha. So then Kapila Dev, he gives a detailed description. So I will just describe in brief. So Kapila Dev says that Prakriti is also called as Pradana or Avyakta. The Prakriti is also called as Pradana or Avyakta. So, so this is the unmanifest stage of the material nature. So when the Prakriti, from this unmanifest stage, 24 elements actually emanate. We will see how this 24 elements emanate by a process. The 24 elements are, the 24 elements are the 5 working senses. Working senses are hands, legs, the speech and genitals and rectum. Five working senses and 5 knowledge acquiring senses: ears, eyes, nostril, the tongue, etc. The 5 knowledge acquiring senses, 5 working senses, 5 plus 5, 10. Then the 5 elements: earth, water, fire, air, and ether. 15. Then the 5 sense objects, which are called as tanmatras. The sense objects are sound, speech, form, smell, corresponding to the 5 knowledge acquiring senses, the 5 sense objects. 5 plus 5, so 10 plus 5 plus 5, 20. So then mind, intelligence and ego, 23. And the 24th is the chitta or the consciousness. So the 25th element is the time factor. So basically from the pradana, the first 24 elements emanate. Then the 5 knowledge acquiring senses, 5 working senses, the 5 great elements, and the 5 tanmatras, and mind, intelligence, ego and consciousness. So how these things emanate, that Kapiladev describes. So he says, when the prakriti or pradana, when it is agitated by the time factor, the time factor is nothing but the glance of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord glances over prakriti, then he actually, that glance is called as the time factor. So when the Supreme Lord glances over the prakriti, then what happens, the Supreme Lord impregnates the prakriti with the living entities, and it gives birth to what is called as Mahatattva. So the time factor is the instigator of fear in the heart of the living entities, but the same time factor agitates the prakriti, which leads to creation. The time factor, the Lord is present internally as the Paramatma and externally as the time factor. So by the agitation of the time factor over the prakriti, then what emanates is the Lord actually impregnates the prakriti with the sum total of the living entities, and what emanates is the Mahatattva. So from the Mahatattva is basically the sum total of the cosmic intelligence. Maybe to crude example, like for example, so there is a building is there. So now you see the distinctly different parts of the building. Suppose if the building is actually destroyed, suppose the building gets destroyed and the whole building becomes like everything, suppose a bomb is put, everything becomes like a powder. So everything becomes like just a powder. So that, in fact, the same building was there and that powder also, but that the whole mass of powder is like Mahatattva. And from that actually, this, from the same powder, all those different parts were there, from that different shapes came forth. So Mahatattva is like the sum total of all these elements. So from this Mahatattva, so Kapiladev explains that the representation of the Mahatattva in the body is called as Chitta or the consciousness. And this Mahatattva, it transforms into false ego. We'll just end in another 5 minutes. So this Mahatattva transforms into false ego, and this false ego has got 3 types. False ego in the mode of goodness, Vaikarika. False ego in the mode of passion, called as Taijasa. False ego in the mode of ignorance, called as Tamasa. It's a little technical subject matter, but this is what the described teachings of Kapila, so I have no other alternative. So false ego in 3 modes. And this false ego in the mode of goodness, from the false ego in the mode of goodness emanates the mind. And false ego, from the false ego in the mode of passion comes the intelligence and the different senses, the 5 working senses and the 5 knowledge acquiring senses. They also come from the false ego in the mode of passion. And from the false ego in the mode of ignorance comes the 5 elements, the earth, water, fire, air, ether, and the 5 tanmatras, the different sense objects, they emanate from the false ego in the mode of ignorance. Just one more thing, and the different the different demigods who are in charge of the different senses, they also emanate from the different manifestations of false ego. So in this way, Kapiladev describes this, how the actually creation starts. So after all these elements are emanated, then when these elements were in unmixed form, so then the Supreme Lord entered into all these elements when the Supreme Lord entered into these elements as a super soul, so then what actually comes? The Virata Rupa or the universal form of the Lord. So just to give a recap, everything starts from the Prakriti. When the Prakriti is agitated by the time factor, Mahatattva comes. From Mahatattva transforms into false ego. False ego has three aspects: false ego in mode of goodness, passion and ignorance. And from that comes the false ego, and from the mode of goodness comes the mind. False ego in the mode of passion comes different things like that. So then, so when these are an unmixed form, then the Supreme Lord enters into all these elements. Then, because of the presence of the Supreme Lord, then the universal form comes. Then Kapiladev describes that how the creation of the different various limbs of the universal form, how the creation of the various limbs of the universal form take place. He explains that first the mouth of the universal form comes, and from the mouth of the universal form, mouth is the grass organ. From the grass organ, the subtle sense organ comes, and then the demigod who is in charge of the mouth organ, he comes. So this, and then the nostrils of the universal form, it appears. From the nostrils of the universal form, the subtle sense organ corresponding to the nostrils, that comes forth. And then the demigod who is going to be the controller of the nostrils, he gets created. So basically you see that the different demigods who are actually controlling the different senses of the body. So Prabhupada explains in a purport that even the the act of passing stool is also under the control of some particular demigod. So we can understand that ultimately, we are under the control of so many factors. So these things actually emanate. And then Kapiladev comes to the conclusion of the chapter by describing that when all these demigods who are in charge of the different senses, when all these are created, and all these demigods, they try to wake up the Virata Purusha, the universal form. But they were not able to wake up the Virata Purusha. When the Supreme Lord Vasudev entered the heart of the Virata Purusha, then the Virata Purusha actually rose up from the water. So therefore, the conclusion of this chapter, which is the most important thing. So as long as the Supreme Lord did not enter, then the demigods who are in charge of the different senses, who are supposed to carry out different functions of the creation, they were not able to do anything. Only when the Supreme Lord enters as the super soul, then the different forms emanated. Even when the different elements were created, you can understand the Supreme Lord's intervention in every aspect of the creation. Only when the Supreme Lord glanced at Prakriti, then the creation started. In the beginning, his intervention was there. And then when the elements were created, again when the Supreme Lord entered into different elements, then the Virata universal form came. Then after the universal, after the different limbs of the universal form came forth, and then the different sense devatas, when they appeared, then even after that, the sense devatas, they were not able to wake up the universal form without again the Supreme Lord entering into the universal form as the super soul. So you can understand the intervention of the Supreme Lord in every stage of the creation. So therefore, Kapiladev concludes this chapter, which is the goal of explaining all this analysis of the elements. So what is that goal? Is to contemplate on the super soul through devotion, detachment and spiritual knowledge. So even if you are not able to follow the technical details of how these different elements actually emanated, the conclusion of this discussion is that one has to contemplate on the super soul. As I mentioned, Sankhya Yoga means what? You understand the different elements of the universe, how they emanated, for the purpose of yoga for the purpose of connecting with the Supreme Lord. So this analysis of Kapila Dev described that how described about the intervention of the super soul at every stage of creation. So therefore the conclusion is that one should contemplate on the super soul with bhakti, knowledge and detachment. So in this way Kapila Dev describes, we just covered two chapters, we will not go beyond that, but there are so many beautiful actually chapters in this verses. Kapila Dev describes next about he describes about as I mentioned bhakti mishra yoga. I describe the different stages of yoga and then meditating on the different limbs of the Supreme Lord, meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord, meditating on the smile of the Lord, meditating on the glance of the Lord, and then he also describes the adverse nature of fruitive activities. When people perform fruitive activities, how a person goes through so much of miseries while living in this world, and after death, when a person is going to hell, what kind of suffering, how a person is actually punished by the different Yamadutas, and what kind of suffering a person gets in the Yamaloka. So all these are described in detail. So why Kapila Dev described the adverse nature of fruitive activities? Because by hearing that description, one will develop an attitude of detachment, so that one does not engage in those fruitive activities. And Kapila Dev also describes the bhakti in three modes of nature. Bhakti in mode of goodness, passion and ignorance. What are the different characteristics? And Kapila Dev describes the different gradations of living entities, inanimate objects and then living objects but which are not moving, and then more developed objects and more developed consciousness, like that different, he gives the gradations of living entities. And Kapila Dev he also gives a description of the embryology, how the living entity when he gets conceived in the womb of the mother, what are the different stages of living entity. So I will just conclude with this one point. Like Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita 13th chapter, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi Dukkha Doshanu Darshanam. Dukkha Doshanu Darshanam, that means one should contemplate on the, one should repeatedly contemplate on the miseries of Janma, Mrityu and Jara and Vyadi, birth, old age, disease and death. So Prabhupada writes in that purport that unless a person has a pessimistic view towards the life, one will not get an impetus to practice spiritual life. So in order to get a pessimistic view towards the life, one should repeatedly contemplate about birth, old age, disease and death. Then one may think that if a person is having only, contemplating only about these negative things, then one may become a very dry person. But Prabhupada also explains in the 15th chapter, when Krishna describes the spiritual world. The spiritual world is a place where there is no sun or moon or electricity. Narat basayate suryo nashashankona pavakaha. So there is no sun, there is no need of sun, moon or electricity. So in that purport, Prabhupada says that when a person hears this description, one should be captivated by hearing this description. So that means in the scriptures, so we see the two aspects. One is that one should develop a pessimistic view towards life by hearing about these miseries, and also one should actually divert one minds to actually hearing about the pastimes of the Lord, the form of the Supreme Lord, the activities of the Lord. And in that way, one should develop a positive attraction in order to be captivated toward the Supreme Lord. So there is a positive aspect and also a negative aspect. So similarly, in this Kapila Dev's teachings, we see that when you hear about that adverse nature of fruitive activities or the sufferings which a living entity goes through in the womb, So by hearing that, you understand that, oh, I don't want to take birth again now. I don't want to go through these sufferings. And there are also other aspects in this chapter in which Kapila Dev describes about the each and every limb of the Lord, starting from the lotus feet, the thighs of the Lord, the navel of the Lord, the different ornaments of the Lord. So in that way, there is a there is a section where a person can develop a positive attraction towards the Lord. So in this way, Kapila Dev describes the Sankhya Yoga. I want to thank all of you for your patient hearing. I think I would like to end here. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.